Future-proof extra from Newstalk.
Now, we keep finding life on Earth in more and more surprising and hostile environments, but it remains the case that no matter where it emerges, life seems to require at least three things: certain essential chemicals, energy, and liquid. In the case of life on Earth, that liquid is water. But could another liquid work? What about methane? Because it so happens that there are methane lakes on Titan. So could Saturn's largest moon harbour life, but not as we know it, Jim? Well, Dr. Nick Lane is Professor of Evolutionary Biochemistry in the Department of Genetics, Evolution and Environment at UCL. He joins me now. Hi, Nick. If you wouldn't mind maybe just giving me a quick rundown of what Titan is like and why Titan even might be in the running for a place where life might have emerged.
Well, it has extremely different conditions to anything else that we're used to. I mean, the really interesting thing about Titan is that there isn't really any liquid water there at all, but there are these lakes of liquid methane as well. And that would force life to be very different if there is life there at all, whereas most of the rest of the places we would be looking, which would include Mars and other moons of Jupiter and Saturn, like Enceladus and Europa, which have a lot of water on. So in those places, we kind of expect life to be a little bit similar to what we know, whereas on Titan, we have no idea.
Well, so let's talk about what would be required as far as we know it, and then what we might substitute in for that. So what do we absolutely need for life? Are we agreed on that in the scientific community, that this is what you need to have life?
No. I mean, insofar as we are, most people would say water is a really good start. Carbon is, again, something that life as we know it really needs carbon.
Why is that? We talk about carbon-based life when we talk about life on Earth. What is that? What does that mean? What's so special about carbon?
Well, it's really good at what it does. And what it does is make strong bonds to make large complex molecules that don't fall to pieces immediately. So you can have DNA, you can have proteins. These are enormous molecules. You know, carbon kind of functions like a Lego brick, and you can make enormously large complex things from it. And nothing else does that job as well as carbon.
Nothing else does that job as well as carbon in these conditions of pressure and temperature, right? I mean, if we had totally different pressure, totally different temperature, could there be something like silicon or arsenic or, I don't know, some other atom that would do that job just as well?
Not to my knowledge, but that's thinking of life as we know it, where we're dealing with molecules where things are screwed together. But, you know, could life just be completely different? My own feeling is I don't think so. But, you know, in some sense, my own feeling doesn't matter, because that's the point of exploration. We find out things that we don't know anything about. So I can't imagine personally how life could be completely different. But on the other hand, I would never have come up with something like Fred Hoyle's black cloud, you know. Can life be on practically the scale of the solar system? I suspect there'd be problems with communication. But unless we are willing to keep open minds, it's hard to know.
So we figure carbon is a great sort of spine for the molecules of life. And then we also need energy for sure. Is that right?
Again, I would say yes. It's hard to imagine something that doesn't require energy. Maybe it could be so slow that we wouldn't see it, but then you'd expect things to disperse. So I'm giving you a description of life as we know it. And carbon, as I say, it's better at doing this chemistry than anything else we know, and it's really abundant. You find it everywhere in the universe, pretty much. And carbon does its chemistry especially well in water. It doesn't do it nearly so well, for example, in liquid methane.
Right.
So whatever we're looking for on Titan, it's unlikely to be life as we know it.
It is possible, I suppose, to recreate some of these atmospheric conditions in which to do experiments, right? I mean, it's not like we have no idea what the conditions on Titan might be with this liquid methane, different pressure and temperature. We can sort of replicate that and see that a totally different way of doing things is probably not, even in those conditions, is not likely.
People have done those kind of experiments and tried, for example, to make cell membranes to see whether you can make, you know, protocell-like structures in liquid methane in the kind of Titan-type environment. And the answer is, well, maybe, certainly nothing like the membranes that we know in water on Earth. Mm. And then we're back around to one of these fundamental questions. What's the membrane for? Why does all life on Earth, why is it all cellular? do we need to have cells, or could you do it without cells? And again, my own feeling is we do need cells, that it keeps the inside different to the outside and gives you a kind of an identity as an individual, I suppose, even if that individual is microscopically small. But the other thing that cells do on Earth is that's exactly where energy flow is taking place. It's between the outside and the inside, and that's really driving growth. It's driving everything about life here. So again, that seems to be practically impossible on Titan from what we know of the chemistry there. And so if it's possible to have life, it would have to be different to anything we know.
Yeah, I remember interviewing Carl Friston about this idea of life and energy and so on. And he was talking about how you need to have the cell, you need to have a thing so that you can separate what it is from what it isn't.
I would agree with that, but it's possible. You don't necessarily need a membrane to have some kind of phase transition, so a lot of bacteria, for example, they don't have a membrane around their genes, but they've definitely got some kind of phase transition between the kind of the aqueous phase and this gelatinous phase where the genes are. So in principle, it's possible to do it without a membrane. In practice, the membrane for all cells on Earth is what's driving energy generation as well. So, you know, when we're respiring, we are charging a membrane. We're putting an electrical charge on it in our mitochondria. And that electrical charge, you know, it's a tiny distance. We're talking about 5 millionths of a millimeter, which is to say 5 nanometers. But that's 150 millivolts. Of electrical charge on that membrane is equivalent to 30 million volts per meter, which is like a bolt of lightning. So all our mitochondria, where we're generating energy, have got this electrical charge equivalent to a bolt of lightning on their membranes, and all life works that way. All bacteria work that way as well. So is it fundamental? I personally think it is. I think it's driving these processes, in which case I would be surprised if there was anything possible like that in the environment on Titan.
When we talk about life on Earth, as you say, the best guess at the moment is that that life originated from this mix of temperature, rich mix of minerals, pressure at the bottom of the ocean, and that sort of intensity of pressures kind of gave life to different sort of movements of cells and materials and energy that eventually sort of just popped into self-organizing life and the world we see it today, which to me, the idea that we came from rocks is so insane. But is that what we imagine might also happen on Titan, for example? Could we imagine that life would be theoretically possible at this intersection of great pressures and energy?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about Titan, but Enceladus, which is one of the moons of Saturn, and Europa is a moon of Jupiter, so you know, very very close to Titan. They have liquid water, and they have underneath a kind of an icy crust, which could be kilometers thick. But underneath that, there's liquid oceans, and they are kept liquid by the gravitational tug of Jupiter or Saturn. And we know Cassini, in flying past, has photographed these plumes coming through cracks in the ice in the surface, and these plumes are effectively geothermal, and they are strongly alkaline, rich in hydrogen, and full of organic molecules. So we don't necessarily think that's life. It could be just the same processes that we think gave rise to life on Earth, but it's the same kind of chemistry that we're familiar with from here.
But if we apply a dozen monkeys infinitely typing on a typewriter principle to create Shakespeare's entire works to something like Enceladus. You're talking about organic chemistry, pressure, water. Shouldn't we expect that unless life came to us from some other part of the solar system, shouldn't we expect that given enough time, these monkeys of pressure and atmosphere and energy and material should eventually spurt forward some embryonic splooge that might one day be a radio presenter from Enceladus?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't say it's anything to do with monkeys, which implies just kind of random kind of searching of sequence space, if you like, to eventually find the right pattern that somehow springs to life.
Well, I guess it's that sort of, the sort of like randomness of putting a number of factors together, eventually you might come out with something.
None of this is necessarily random. I mean, we're dealing, in some kind of a hydrothermal vent or something, we're dealing with a specific set of chemicals. Pressure probably is important, but there's probably a lot of tolerance for a wide range of pressure. We're dealing with carbon chemistry, we're dealing with hydrogen, we're dealing with rather similar kinds of conditions, and these are produced by planets all the time, and so it's being funneled towards the right conditions, and that's not just here, that's on Enceladus and places as well. So does that mean life's inevitable? Not necessarily, but it certainly means that the beginnings, the things that you need to put in place to begin to get, kind of quasi-life, protocell-type things, I don't think is necessarily so difficult.
When we talk about life, that sort of ill-fated picture of the ascent of man, where we came from primitive creatures and now we're human beings, rewinding that back to shared last universal common ancestor of all living things, and then beyond that, is there a significant gap of how we got from rocks, heat, those minerals, to self-organizing molecules and enzymes and so on?
There's a very significant gap between bacteria and everything else. So the earliest signs of life on Earth go back practically 4 billion years, and it seems as if life started almost as soon as it could. And that doesn't mean anything necessarily statistically, but if you combine it with the kind of conditions that should be giving rise to organic molecules and the self-organization of chemistry, it doesn't seem to me that it's necessarily that hard to get to bacteria. And that's why a lot of us now are working on this question of the origin of life, because it seems like a soluble problem. But then after that, once you've got bacteria, you have this, 2 to 3 billion year delay where the Earth was full of bacteria. But it was a long time before you got anything even as complex as an amoeba, let alone, animals and plants and things. They just come really just in the last few hundred million years, which is, a blink of an eye in geological time. So there was a long, long delay there. And again, there's an argument to say it was linked to the structure of cells and the way that they deal with energy and the requirement for using cell membranes again for generating energy in cells. Not everybody agrees about that, but there's certainly this long gap, and so there's no inevitability about complex life forming on other planets. I think we'll find bacteria in other places, but the idea of finding something as complex as, say, an octopus, well, that's going to be much more difficult.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking of that machine in Douglas Adams' The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series, where there's this all-encompassing machine that can answer any question. It's sort of, there's an analogy there in my mind when you think of a world teeming with bacteria interacting with each other, that eventually that they will come up with the answer because they've had billions of years to just move together, and then at some point just something happens and that then triggers all life as we know it.
Well, the strange thing is, though, bacteria are still basically bacteria. They're still doing the same thing today. So all complex life on Earth comes from a common ancestor, which, so far as we can tell, only arose once.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of amoeba-like cell, maybe 1.5 billion years ago, which was probably cell getting inside another cell. There was some kind of what we call an endosymbiosis at the origin of all of that. And that's a pretty rare event. And once they've got inside, the chances of it all going wrong and falling extinct is pretty high as well. So far as we can tell, just bacteria doing their stuff and kind of calculating their way through all the possibilities. Those possibilities are fairly limited for energetic reasons, not necessarily for information reasons.
So you're saying that life is pretty unlikely?
Bacteria are pretty likely, but complex life is much less likely.
Well, Dr. Nick Lane, a professor of evolutionary biochemistry at UCL, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.